Hello and welcome to Amplisil Partners' signature series, Your Story is Our Story. We are here to introduce you to the people behind entrepreneurship and philanthropy. Together, we will get to know them on a personal level, walk through their early days, and better understand their mission. We encourage you to listen as their voices change, showcasing excitement or confessing their fears. You might so happen to notice that their story is not so dissimilar from our own. My name is Kevin Entwistle, and I will be your host today on Your Story is Our Story. Today, we have Marketing Officer for Autism Society of America, and she's extremely passionate about keeping busy. Don't believe me? Here's a 15-second glance at her current resume. Co-founder of Make Waves, a 501c3 that supports organizations focused on equal employment opportunities and replicable housing models for individuals on the autism spectrum. President of the Roth Family Foundation, which focuses on improving the quality of life for individuals with neurological and physical challenges. Co-founder of CoAware, an online marketplace connecting real estate photographers with users needing on-demand services. Founder of 21 Fish, reinvigorating brand personalities. Boston College D1 athlete, and I would imagine above all else, a proud sister and family member. Kristen, we are so thankful that you are joining us here today.
Thanks for having me. Quite the intro. Thank you.
Kristen and I first met at the annual Autism Roundtable in Atlanta, Georgia, where she was on stage speaking to a room full of experts, doctors, and donors, which says something about Kristen's own professionalism. And now she's speaking at our Young Successes program in New York City today, so she's already warmed up and excited to share her story. So I just wanted to spend a few minutes introducing our audience to you, and rather than a formal Q&A, I imagine most listeners might find it refreshing to have you lead the introduction. So on your terms, can you tell us about yourself and how you came to being who you are today?
I grew up on the South Shore of Massachusetts, just outside Boston, with my parents' younger brother and two golden retrievers. So that in itself, I feel like sums me up pretty well. Ocean, family, and puppies. That's a good representation of all the things I love. I grew up in a family business, so I had that entrepreneurial spirit kind of driven into me at a young age. My younger brother, Derek, is a year younger, and he's on the autism spectrum, so that also drove a lot of my ambition and desire to get involved in nonprofits and philanthropic efforts kind of throughout my childhood and early adulthood. And I was also a swimmer, went to Boston College, go Eagles, and a few years back, got out of that terrible New England weather and headed west for the endless summer dream in California. So
Very nice. That's
where I am now.
Thanks for sharing that. Take us back to your early childhood in South Shore, Mass. What was it like being you in, school, in sports?
I was a pretty good student. I didn't have to be told to do my homework or study. I always got things in on time, and I think that was largely attributed to the fact that athletics were such a big part of my life. So I learned time management skills and a strong work ethic early on. I was also part of a national club team for swimming, so I was training about 25 hours a week, which is a pretty big commitment for a high school age student. So that was a large part of my life, and I feel like those skills reinforced my desire to be an entrepreneur one day and start my own business. And I think my first true endeavor in that area was starting my own swimming lessons company in the summers and teaching swimming lessons to kids out of our own home pool. So I did the whole events, like word of mouth marketing, advertisements. So I started pretty young there.
You start small and you scaffold, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it seems like you have a really cool background with your family business. I'm sure they're very supportive of your sports growing up. When did you discover that you yourself were an entrepreneur and that this is something that you were going to do? Of course, you did the swim lessons, but when did you know you were going to take it to the next level?
That's a good question. I don't know if there was a true defining moment. Like I said, growing up in a family business, I was skirting those child labor laws at an early age and was always working at the company from 8 years old through high school. But I do remember I was probably 5 or 6, and my mom taught me how to use Photoshop and Illustrator. I think it was Adobe Freehand at the time back then. And she's incredibly creative and has this product-oriented mind where she can envision things and actually make them come to life. So I remember freehanding a book report cover with 2 huskies and this elaborate gradient in this Alaskan background, getting it printed in full cover, binding it with a plastic cover and everything, and handing it in first grade. And this teacher is probably like, who on earth does this girl think she is? But I feel like even from that age, I had a really strong desire to be creative and to kind of push the limits and think outside the box in that sense.
So I want to get more into that as well. And being the chief marketing officer for Autism Society of America, I'm sure you're putting a lot of these skills to work. And I want to talk a little bit more about your leadership and that sort of thing. So just for starting the story here, what is drawing so much attention today to autism versus 10 or 20 years ago in the space?
That's a really good question. So the conversation and mass market dialogue has changed a lot over the last 20 years. And I think it's a huge testament to my parents' generation, the parents that were raising kids with autism in the 90s, early 2000s. And they were really putting pressure on early diagnosis and early intervention programs. And their advocacy was in large part the main cause for bringing it to this national scale and having it part of a more mainstream dialogue. Now you see all those kids are adults, and we have about 500,000 adults on the autism spectrum in the US alone. And all of these families are now asking, well, now what? We need long-term care now. What about housing? What about employment? So you've seen that mentality and the conversation shift to those topics. There aren't any truly scalable housing community models or inclusive employment programs that can address the needs and services that this community needs today.
And I know when we were in Georgia at the Autism Roundtable, there were some folks speaking about programs that are going on where they're hiring people on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through like what that looks like right now? What maybe some, how you guys with your foundation are kind of weaving that path or creating that path, I should say?
Yeah, so Make Waves, our nonprofit, focuses on supporting organizations and existing programs that are creating replicable models in housing and employment opportunities. For adults on the autism spectrum that are employable, 85% are unemployed, which is an insane statistic. It's truly heartbreaking to think about. And what we want to do is really identify and vet these organizations that are creating these models and try to figure out a way in which we can support them to be replicated and adapted to other markets and to different levels of need. And there are some people that are doing it really well. And for employment, it really starts with having an inclusive, open-minded hiring practice and realizing that everyone has a skill set to contribute and give back and be a meaningful member of a company. And on the flip side, everyone has the right to have an employment opportunity and earn their own money for sustainable living.
And where does Derek, your brother, fit into all of this? I'm sure he's very much part of this story and his passion. Is he working right now? Is he one of those 85%? How are you working with him on this?
So he transitioned out of my parents' house almost, I think we're coming up on 3 years ago. And he moved into a house with 3 other individuals on the spectrum. It was a private pay solution where we had a third-party service provider coming in and managing the individuals that lived there and helping them with life skills and transitional independent living skills. He did have a job coach, and he currently works at this high-end concept grocery store, kind of like a Whole Foods, but a local company. And he's doing really well, and he actually just got accepted into a curriculum-based transition program called First Place Transition Academy, and that's based in Phoenix. So we're really excited and proud of him, and it's going to teach him the tools and skill sets he needs to truly live independently.
And that's a great example, and congratulations. That's
thank you.
On that note, you and your team are content creators, and I know that you and Derek had put together this really cool, what I believe is called Sibling Series video on your website, Make Waves. Can you tell us what it was like to shoot that with Derek and what the whole production was about?
Yeah, so this is definitely part of my fake it till you make it entrepreneur mentality, because our content creation team is me, so you're looking at it. We've done a couple of videos now, and mainly we wanted to build this brand experience of what we want Make Waves to be and what we wanted it to represent. Our sibling series was focused on the hugely important and prominent role of the sibling relationship and how that relates to the family dynamic of families that are impacted by autism. And I reached out to Tom Dieri of Rising Tide Car Wash and Walter Suskind from Life Animated. And we had met briefly a few years back and had this immediate connection, really just based on shared experiences. And I presented this idea of a sibling series where we wanted to empower siblings to be a resource for one another and find and unite our voices as sibling advocates to ultimately be better brothers and sisters for our loved ones.
And those are really good byproducts, almost, it seems like, or resources for these programs. But what is it you mentioned that you really want this to represent deep down? Is it shared community? Is it the idea of advancement or progress? What is the deep core driver of all of this?
I think it's acceptance and inclusion. And how can we encourage and empower people to share their stories and share their truths while being accepting and understanding of each other? And if we can be open and honest and acknowledge the challenges, acknowledge the hard times, but also celebrate all of those positives, it's only going to make a positive impact in those around us and ultimately, hopefully, create a better future for our loved ones in a more inclusive society.
Scott Badesh, the CEO of Autism Society of America, said about you, "Kristen is that special professional who views her clients as partners in advancing the work of corporations, not-for-profits, and individuals." What does this mean to you, coming from someone like Scott? And what types of partnerships or projects are you currently working on together?
I'm really appreciative of those words. Scott and I have had a great working relationship those last few years, and he is truly driven by passion and a strong desire to help others. And I think that's really evident in his work with the Autism Society of America and also his commitment to the community as a whole. Now that I've joined the staff, I hope to further the Autism Society's efforts by really strengthening our relationship with our own affiliates and constituents, but also building a really strong brand experience for them to relate to, rely upon, support, share, and grow with.
And before we transition to some of your entrepreneurship as well, what is one piece of wisdom you've started to do it, but or just thought that you want to share with our listeners about autism?
I always say if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. You and I both have brown hair. That doesn't mean we have the same skill sets or characteristics or challenges that we face. Some individuals on the spectrum may be nonverbal but have full cognitive abilities. Others may have speech but have developmental delays. And it truly just shows that you can't judge someone based on their perceived abilities. I truly believe that everyone is unique and has something to offer. So everyone can make waves and contribute, so be open and don't judge.
Well, there's a lot of room for growth, for learning, for acceptance, so I really appreciate that segment of the podcast.
Thank you.
And I hope we continue that conversation. And just transitioning a little bit to entrepreneurship, I know it all relates, but just curious, how did you start your companies? Did you raise, did you bootstrap, even if you want to speak to the foundation at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So CoAware is a software company that I started with my then boyfriend, now husband. It's a real estate photography marketplace that matches real estate photographers with users who need on-demand marketing services. And we actually spun off that software from a sister company, so we were able to fund it that way when we were getting started. For Make Waves, similarly, that started as a standalone fundraising campaign, and it quickly turned into this amazing grassroots effort that got a lot more people involved than I anticipated. And we ended up raising over $20,000 in just a couple weeks. So I decided to make it into a full nonprofit. And when we did that, we were also able to fund that through our own philanthropic dollars. But we really have minimal overhead, so it still works.
And what is it about the age 22 that is crucial to your mission?
Yeah, so that's a good question. For many individuals with disabilities, state-funded programs and services stop when you age out of the system, which is typically about 22 years old. The challenge here is that even if you did have the financial means or the time to be a really proactive advocate for your loved one or for yourself, your options for housing and employment are still very limited. State-funded housing programs saw waiting lists anywhere from 2 to 18 years, and all of us, we need answers and solutions now. So there are very few inclusive hiring and inclusive living communities that are acceptable for the mass amount of people that need help today.
And how can someone become a wave maker?
There are so many ways to get involved. You can definitely donate and attend fundraising events. You can host an event. Even sharing your story and raising your voice as an advocate or asking how to be an advocate, that's a way to get involved. I also think that just learning and asking questions and trying to understand someone else's story is hugely important and advances our cause of spreading awareness, which hopefully leads to acceptance and ultimately elicits change.
And then how are people finding you? So, of course, families that are looking for adult children with autism for home or employment, they know that they need to find something, but do they know that you're out there? How are you spreading your message to your target audience?
Mm-hmm. We have a website, makewaves.blue, and we share a lot of content, not only about our own story and journey, but also a lot of the organizations that are doing amazing work right now and that we support. So we personally vet every single grant recipient that we work with, and I'm sure we'll get into that later, but I think it's important to reach out to experts and organizations on the field, whether it's Make Waves or Autism Society or someone else, and find localized support and the answers that work best, and because it's going to be different for everyone.
Sure, and I've also seen too, there's partnerships, is it with Live This Day? They have these hot programs where you can donate to different charities per se.
Yeah, in the past we have worked with some sponsors and companies like 9to5, which they donate a portion of their proceeds from hat purchases and apparel to certain organizations. Make Waves was a benefactor of that a couple of years ago. And we're always looking for opportunities and partners with our events.
Amazing. And I want to also give you a chance before we turn to our next segment to tell your sibling story. I know there's a hashtag My Sibling Story, and you mentioned this at the beginning of our podcast, but in light of helping unite voices and sibling advocates and that sort of thing, if you're willing, we'd love to hear your relationship with your brother and through the years.
Yeah, and that's a loaded question. I have so many stories, of course, and it's continually evolving, but I do have a great relationship with my brother. He's my favorite person in the entire world. He's loving and kind and funny and makes the world a better place. But I will share one story. A few years ago, I was going on a family vacation and I had just graduated college and Lucky for me, I got to use my parents' miles, and we were walking on the plane, and we got to be in first class, which was awesome, and we were flying to California, and we walked on the plane, and my brother's walking in front of me, and all of a sudden, this flight attendant said, "Oh my gosh, Derek, how are you?" And she turns around, she says, "Kathy, guess who's on the flight today?" And so I immediately start laughing because this happens all the time. And Derek starts talking to her, asking how her day was. And we sit down, we're getting settled. And the flight attendant is behind me and she's getting some, hanging some coats or something. And I overhear her turn to what I presume was a new attendant, and she said, "Derek's on this route all the time. He makes my week." She had said it softly, and it was just something that I overheard, and it was such a powerful moment. I mean, what a nice thing to say about someone, and to recognize that he had this impact on someone that he didn't know, it really made me feel like autism does not define him. It's a part of who he is, but he truly creates a ripple effect wherever he goes and makes a lasting impact on those around him. And I've had so many examples of this same story happening in different states, in my town, most recently in another country, and he's just hysterical. He's like this little local celebrity that brings a smile to everyone's face. And you know, that's not to say that we haven't had challenges and our own hard moments, but it's all relative and that's my normal, so I can't compare it to anything else.
And thank you so much for sharing that.
That's
a really nice story, and especially, gosh, for people to say that, you know, quietly, not in front of anybody.
Right.
That really shows. So really nice story. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I'm excited to see what you and Derek and your family continue to do with autism. We talked about 10, 20 years ago, it was different, and it's just advancing very quickly, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very exciting. A lot of opportunities. And so just wrapping up here too, kind of peeling it all back together. As a founder, what have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about what you want to do? Can you share some insight there?
So much. I learned how to fail really hard. And I think you always want to hear these wonderful, amazing startup success stories and people rising from the ashes. And while those are amazing, 95% of the time you're tripping on your face, falling down, and being kicked while you're down. So I think I learned how to be resilient, how to get back up, and really challenge myself to learn. And if I didn't know how to do something, I had to figure it out because no one was going to tell me how to do it. All of these mistakes come together, obviously, as lessons learned, but it's really hard to recognize while you're in the moment. But my mom gave me great advice that every single job, every single moment in your career is a stepping point, and it's going to bring you to the next opportunity. And you can't look at it as time lost, or if you regret something, or if you're super proud of something, it all matters and it all brings you to the next opportunity.
And you've obviously had a family background with business. What's it like working with your husband? What's it like working with Derek? It's part of the family.
Yeah, so growing up in a family business is definitely a unique dynamic. Through high school, I tried to quit numerous times. It's not allowed. I had this instinctual gut feeling that I wasn't ever going to take over the family business because I always knew I wanted to find something that I was passionate about and start my own thing. So I have worked with the family, continued to work with them through the foundation and Make Waves, and we have done it for so long that it's pretty natural now. When Alex and I started CoAware, we were still dating. Now we're married, so we made it through that at least so far. So that's also a whole other experience, starting a business with your significant other. And for us, we were very lucky. It was pretty natural, and we were on the same page for a lot of things. We're both very strong-willed and have similar ideas, so we're able to kind of balance each other out and work together. But it's special. Not a lot of people can do that, and I don't take that for granted. When I transitioned out of CoAware a few months ago, it was a massive decision, and it was something that we worked through together, and that says a lot about the strength of balancing a relationship with your loved ones and also being able to be business-minded and make the best decisions for yourself.
And let's just talk about massive decisions for a second
for
our listeners, because you made a few and we want to learn from you. And we had Dave McGillivray on last week, and he talked about these individual profound moments in life. It's a series of events that start to direct you, and it sounds like that's what your mom was getting at a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Can you offer some advice to listeners who either have, they're a couple and they want to start a family, quote unquote, business, or they've been just thinking about the side hustle for so long and they know they want to get started and their situation's different, but how did you really get yourselves, you and your husband, to get off the fence and start a business?
My driving force every day is, am I waking up and doing something that I love? Am I excited to go to work? Am I doing something that I'm passionate about? And if the answer is no, then I know that I need to change something. So if someone finds themselves in that situation and they've had this pull or desire to go into a certain area and haven't taken the jump, make a plan, figure out your timing, and commit to it, because nothing's ever going to be perfect. It's never going to be easy. So once you accept that, you kind of just have to take the risk and dive in. When Alex and I started our company, we were burnt out with our previous jobs. We were unhappy on the East Coast. The weather just was really getting us down after 25 years of it. So we picked a month and said, okay, by December, we're moving to California and we're gonna quit our jobs. This is what we're doing. And within a week, we packed up, moved across the country, moved in together for the first time, and started a business together. So my mom and dad were like, okay, one of those things is a big deal. You're probably gonna fall off the deep end here. You're doing it all in the same week. But when you have to go for it, you just gotta
jump right in. It seems like it's the mirror test, right? Look yourself in the mirror. Am I doing something I love?
Right.
So that's amazing. Thank you. And just a question or two left here. What do you hope to instill in others in the work that you're doing? I know we've talked a lot about your projects, the people you're working with, some of your deepest passions about it, but what's just one thing you want to leave the listeners with that you hope to instill?
We touched upon it a little bit, but definitely inclusivity and acceptance. I have so much hope for the future, and it's essential when working on these big problems that we're doing it together. And we have to be open-minded and open to different solutions. And we can't do that without awareness and acceptance for those that are different than us.
Thank you. And do you have a favorite quote or memorized meditation? You do yoga, right?
Yes. And I have two favorite quotes. The first one is, what would you attempt to do if you could not fail? My dad got me this little paperweight that said that after I graduated college, and I still have it on my desk today. And the second one, ironically, it was a question in my eighth grade MCAS standardized testing when I first came across this quote. And it's the last line from a poem called Barter by Sarah Teasdale. And the last line says, for a breath of ecstasy, give all you have been or could be. And both of those really represent, to me, words to live by, because it's encouraging me to constantly be reaching towards my goals and living a fulfilling, passionate life.
Kristen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
And thank you all for tuning into this episode. Please feel free to leave a comment or tag a friend who might be interested in learning more. If anyone is interested in hearing more about Kristen, be sure to check out her company website or find her on social media. She has much more to share. Have a great day, and we will be back with more entrepreneurs and philanthropists soon. Thank you for listening.